Magic Lessons is supported in part by Audible.com. Audible content includes more than 250,000 audio programs from leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazines, and newspaper publishers, and business information providers. Audible content is downloaded and played back on your smartphone, portable device, or PC. Magic Lessons listeners might enjoy The One Life We're Given, Finding the Wisdom That Waits in Your Heart by Mark Nepo, the poet, philosopher, and my dear friend. And he's one of our guests this season on the podcast. Audible is offering Magic Lessons podcast listeners a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audible.com/lessons and choose from over 250,000 titles and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/lessons. That's audible.com/lessons and get started today. Just a heads up, everybody. These are adults having adult conversations, so there is the possibility of adult language. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Magic Lessons, a podcast produced by MaximumFun.org. I'm Elizabeth Gilbert, and last year I wrote this book called Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. But even when I was finished with the book, I was definitely not finished with the topic because I'm still as much as ever fascinated with the intricacies of the creative process and how we find our way through that strange journey, the obstacles we meet along the way, and the joy of what we ultimately create. And it is through my desire to keep having that conversation that this, the Magic Lessons podcast, was born. So here we are. Season 2, and we are back. Back with more real conversations with real people, amateurs and experts. This season, we will be meeting poets and novelists, dancers, photographers, comedians, and whether they're ready or not, me and my friends are going to help them figure out how to shake off their fear, get unstuck, and start making stuff. You know why? Because I think they are ready. So let's go. Today, I'm calling Keith in Maryland.
Good morning, this is Keith.
Hey, Keith, it's Liz Gilbert. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you, Liz?
I'm great. Thank you for taking my call this morning.
Oh, I'm ecstatic. It's so good to hear you.
So listen, I know a little bit about your backstory, but our listeners don't know a thing about you. So I thought the most efficient way for us to begin this is if you could read the essay that you sent me about the creative issue that you're having. Do you mind doing that?
Not at all.
All right, go for it.
I want to create a training center for the Charm City Comedy Project. My hopes are that I can create a home for comedians and performers in Baltimore. My fears are that I'm investing all of my time on helping other people realize their dreams, that I start to neglect my own. I started this theater because I love performing. Now that I spend so much time running the theater, I barely perform anymore. I sometimes worry that I've spent all this time building a runway because I'm actually scared to fly.
Let's start unraveling this, shall we?
I'd love to.
Let's just get to the bottom of this. Why don't we start with who you are and why you love comedy and how you got started in this and what it means to you. So just give me a little bit of your backstory before even beginning this project.
Yeah, I think that comedy has just always been in my blood. It's kind of how I've dealt with life and how I've gotten through it up to this point. I remember when I was in first grade, we had to do a book about who we are and what we wanted to be. And my first grade little book at Who I Am, it was, I want to be a class clown.
And that's an honorable profession.
I didn't know. It was either that or a frog. And I remember Miss Simmons, she like put an X on it because you're not allowed to be the class clown.
Oh,
so it was always like this bad thing you're not supposed to do. You know, I was always goofing off and always enjoyed comedy. And then I started taking classes about 5 years ago. I kind of put it away because there's nowhere, how do you do comedy? I never made sense of it. It never added up. Eventually, I found that there were classes in Baltimore, and I started taking improv classes. And I took all the classes, and then there was nowhere to perform. There was no stages. Nobody was booking independent troupes. So in the summer of 2012, I started booking my own shows, and it started a show every couple months, and then it was a show a month, and then it was a show a week, and then starting about a year ago, we were doing 8 shows a week, and it just took over my whole life, putting all these shows together.
And when you say we were doing 8 shows a week, what you mean is you were producing 8 shows a week, or you were starring in 8 shows a week, or you were, what do you mean by, what did that exactly look like?
Yeah, we were producing 8 shows a week. So at first I really felt like I put the organizations on my shoulders, and I was in all the shows for about a little over a year and a half. Mm-hmm. I was with a bunch of different improv troupes, and I performed twice a night most of the time, and I was really performing, and I did that for a while. And then as the organization grew, we just kept on producing more and more shows to the point where I was then producing two shows a night, four nights a week. And it was really all kinds of different stuff. We do a ton of open mics, and we've done game shows, and we have a fake wrestling league and a fake live comic book championship comics. So we just have a ton of different shows that we produce.
I'm really interested in the fake wrestling league.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about that?
Well, it took a huge turn at Restival Festival 3 during our festival. So it was, up until that point, championship air wrestling. And we do all our shows at a bar. So one time we had this huge, no-holds-barred, hardcore wrestling match where it sounded like the floor was going to fall in below us, so we weren't allowed to wrestle anymore. So then we did a whole year of behind the scenes of championship air wrestling. So then that was all backstage. So this is all sort of a sketch improv hybrid show.
Right.
And then finally, Restival Festival, it turns out the entire wrestling league took place inside of a comic book written by a character in Championship Comics, Al Burt. So now he has retconned the entire continuity of the show, where now it's championship arm wrestling, and now Major Danger's the champion.
Well, this is all very good for me to know.
Backstory.
No, I love it. I love it. See, like, well, first of all, before we go on to what the issue or perceived obstacle is, I just want to congratulate you because you already have done the thing that I'm always telling people to do, which is there was a vacuum, right? There was a need that you had and a desire that you had to perform and to create comedy, and there was no space for it, and you didn't have any backing. Like, there wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
And so you went and you made a thing that wasn't there before, which is the exact definition of creativity. And now there's a thing, you know, now there's this troupe, now there's this bunch of people who do stuff together, now there's an audience. That's amazing.
Thank you.
So there's a level at which I'm already not at all worried about you, because I know that you're capable of taking nothing and making something out of nothing, which is the essence of creative living, right? Now the question is this what you want to be doing with your time and energies going forward, right? I feel like that's sort of maybe a little bit where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have that right? Or do you want to talk about what you're feeling is the obstacle and the difficulty at this point?
Well, the feeling, and especially when I wrote that, is that it was just all-encompassing and that there was no time when I could just sort of turn it off. And it was a sudden realization that I was always on duty, and it just kind of blew me away. I'm going to school, and I've actually going to school to learn how to better run a business so that this can be a sustainable thing, the Charm City Comedy Project. So it was just between school and the shows and people just always booking shows, that people always had questions. I was constantly getting pitched different ideas. And I used to be in a fake wrestling league.
We've all been in a fake wrestling league at some point in our lives. You don't have to brag.
I don't need to brag. You're right.
I'm still in a fake wrestling league. But yeah, go on. You used to be in your fake wrestling league and had a bunch of characters. And then what happened?
I took on the manager hat, and I never really got to put on the performer hat anymore.
Right.
And it really felt very, very, I guess, stifling in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a little, I mean, what you're talking about is a very interesting thing that I think happens in many creative people's lives, where you embark on this thing out of love, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you embark in this thing out of passion. You don't really know how to do it. You want to learn how to do it. It delights you. It makes you feel like you're not just here to pay bills and die, right? Like, that's why
exactly.
We make art. Like, you want to have a life that means something a little bit more than clocking in, you know, and only being productive and only being in business. You want to make something. So you make something, and then it becomes so successful that it becomes a business. In which case, you're sort of like, well, why didn't I just stay in a better paying job, right? Like, you know,
yeah.
Like that's I think that's the irony that often happens, or where people face this issue where it's like, well, I'm working harder than I would work if I had a day job, and I'm probably not getting paid as much as if I had a day job, and I'm not really making art. So what are we doing? Like, why did this thing turn into that? You know, is that a fair assessment of where you're at a little bit?
You got me pegged. That's exactly what it started to feel like. And it's weird that somehow it was more rewarding when we got no money. because at least that way you knew it was just, okay, we're doing this because we love this.
Right.
So then when you start getting paid a little bit, it's like, okay, we're just, now it gets a little more confusing.
Well, this is going to be a funny thing to say, but you're in a great position where if your goal is to not make money again, that's very easily done. It's a lot harder than other artists whose goal is to actually profit from this. Like, but I know the feeling, too, of not wanting to go backwards, right? And now you have a bunch of people who are relying on you. And in a weird way, you've become the gatekeeper for other people's dreams, where because there was no comedy space like this in Baltimore before you'd made it, all the people who were what you were, you know, 8, 10 years ago, now look to you to make their dreams come true, right? Because you're the guy who can book them, and you're the guy who can get them an audience, you're the guy who can get them space. So suddenly, you have a lot of people that you're responsible for, and you used to just be responsible for you and your dream, right? So now listen, it is fully possible. There is such a thing that this is not a zero-sum game, right? It is fully possible to be a creative person and also to run a creative business and even a creative institution. Like, I was trying to think before I called you of some examples. Robert Redford, incredible actor who also, of course, created Sundance. Bill T. Jones, the great modern dancer who for years has not only been a powerful performer but also the director of a really prominent dance company. There's all those kids from the Upright Citizens Brigade, right, who are sort of more in line with what you're doing, Adam McKay and Amy Poehler and that bunch of crazy kids who do a bunch of stuff and also keep that organization running. And I was thinking also of Kevin Spacey, who for almost 10 years took over artistic directorship of the Old Vic Theatre in London, which is a huge job. He restored the audience, restored the building, brought new plays in, like this huge management position. You know, so there is a legacy, a living legacy within the arts of somebody who both makes art and makes space for other people's art. That is a possible thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do. And I think the only reason to do it is if you absolutely love the business end of this work, if you're just as fascinated with that aspect of it as you are with the creation process. And I also think we have to look to Kevin Spacey here for a role model in this regard, which is that when he took over artistic directorship of the Old Vic Theatre in London, he made a commitment that he would do it for 10 years. And then he left. And he said all the time that he was going to leave. And so what he didn't do was say, this is my entire life now. It was more like, this is the next creative chapter that I want to do. I'm really interested in managing a theater company. And then I'm going to go and get my time back to do other things. So there's this possibility that you don't have to do this forever. There's a possibility that you can do it forever. There's a possibility that you can mitigate the burden on yourself and bring back the performance aspect into your life. There's lots of possibilities here. You can also walk away from the whole thing. If you need somebody to give you permission to do that, I'm here to give you permission to do that. But what I would like to hear is, if you were looking at your life a year from now and you could sketch out exactly what it would look like, where's your time going? Who are you spending it with? And what are you making and what are you doing?
Oh, wow. In a year from now, really, ideally, what I'd like to do... And
I just want to interject here for a second. Don't think small, Keith. You know, like, and don't be afraid to say the truth, because we're not going to be able to get you there unless you're exquisitely clear about what you would like this moment next year to be, you know? So just go for it. Just answer honestly.
I would love to, next year at this time, to have a van and fill it with performers from the Charm City Comedy Project and go out and go across the country and do shows all over America. I'd like to spend the next year really working on a show that, on like a one-man show that I could tour and just see the rest, see how everybody else is doing. And I think I would love to see all the other theaters that are happening in America and everybody else that's making the same thing work. And at the same time, I want to have something that I've created that I can present as I go around.
If only you were specific about what you want.
I'm going to think about it. I'll call you back.
If only you really knew what you wanted, Keith. It sounds so clear to me, right? You've got it. That's it. Now, what is the reason that you can't do that?
The reason that I can't do that is that I have a hard time getting myself to work on a project, especially creatively, in that way where I'd have a show. I think that was part of why I've always been drawn to and love improv, is that you get up there and you do it, and then you don't need to worry about finishing it. And I feel like I have a ton of projects that I've started and just have a hard time getting through it.
So the lovely thing about improv is not a lot of preparation. You don't need the discipline of sitting down every day for a couple hours and working on it. Because it sounds like what you're trying to do now is to create a more formalized show, right? Is that right? Like, you want to make a thing that is written, that is acted? Like, to describe for me what this thing coming out of this van is going to be.
Okay, yeah.
I love it, by the way. I'm for this. I'm for this idea.
Fantastic. It's the first time I saw something like this was at our festival last year, and a bunch of people from the New Movement Theater in New Orleans came up, and Vanessa Gonzalez and Mike Sparra both had these one-person shows that just knocked my socks off. And it was them, and they carried around one of those little, like, carry-on-sized luggage things for the airplane, and it was full of fun props, and they'd have these just tour de force shows, these half-an-hour shows that were just these one-person sketch shows that I was really drawn to it, and I thought it was everything I've wanted to do.
Okay, so that's what you have to do, right? I mean, not their show, but that was the inspiration for the thing that you obviously really want to make. And so I have an assignment for you.
Good.
And it's a kind of a psychological assignment, because I think you know what your creative assignment is, right? Like, you have a very clear vision about where you want to be and what you want to be making. What I perceive to be the obstacle here is that you have talked yourself into believing something about yourself that's a hindrance. And the thing that you've decided to believe is that Keith doesn't have the discipline to get a creative project done. And therefore, he can't do this thing that he wants to do. Like, am I correct in that assessment?
Yeah.
So this is something you decided to tell yourself about yourself. It might be something other people have told you about you, or it might be just, you know, the bad radio frequency in your mind pulling up the most negative possible interpretation of yourself that you've got. But to me, the only obstacle that I see toward you doing this very clear and very distinct and I think really exciting, I kind of want to go on the van trip across America with you guys trip. Like, the only obstacle is that, you know, you've got this outdated thought about yourself, which is that you're sort of a slacker and you don't finish stuff. And so what I need you to do is to write yourself a letter in your own defense. And that letter is going to be very detailed, and it's going to start from like your earliest memory, and it's going to be a letter of honor. And in this letter, and I want you to do this really earnestly, this is not a comedy project because this is like deep soul work here. But what you're doing with this is that you're reestablishing a field of honor and a code of honor about who you are and what your life is and what your possibilities are. And you are going to, with exacting detail, list everything in your life that you have ever gone after with determination and finished. Everything. Every single time in your life when something was important to you and you actually did it, everything that you ever stuck with. And this can go across realms, from creative work to schoolwork to any sort of goals, to a friend that you wanted to have that you went and got, you know, to the comedy space that you wanted to have that you went and created, to the education comedy that you wanted that you went and got for yourself until there were absolutely no classes left in Baltimore for you to take because you had exhausted them. You know, every single thing that you ever wanted to do, no matter how small, whether it's a relationship or a creative project, that you actually went after and got for yourself, I want you to enumerate it in a very detailed, almost legal documentation to prove to yourself that this outdated, musty, dusty, used up, jacked up, useless notion that you have about yourself as somebody who doesn't get stuff done is absolutely wrong. Because I know already from talking to you for 20 minutes that you're somebody who gets stuff done. Like, look what you made, you know? But you haven't yet caught up to who you are now. Like, you're probably living in some version of yourself that's 5 to 10 to 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it's finished. And it's time for you to, like, really sort of throw down this document for yourself. And that's going to be the most important creative project that I'm giving you right now, is to do that. And once you've done that, then I want you to make a schedule about what you're going to do for the next year in order to make sure that next summer you're on the road in that van. And break it down into granular detail and take all the education that you've had from learning how to run a business, how to book acts, take all of those skills that I don't even think you know you have yet, and put them toward creating a document that is incredibly detailed about what the next year of your life is going to be. And then you begin.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
I think it's going to be helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when you're saying that, I'm just thinking that, like, in my head, I've written the opposite letter. You know, I've written the letter of all the things I've dropped, but I've never really thought to rewrite this one, all the things I've actually completed.
Right.
So I think that this is going to be really important.
I don't think you have any idea how disciplined a person you are. I mean, this is the weird thing about our headspace when it comes to our creative identities. We tend to have like an airport hangar size warehouse that we fill with all of our failures and shortcomings that we catalog and curate and keep very close track of. And then we have like 1 3-inch wide shelf available for like anything we actually achieved.
Yeah.
we don't seem to have any storage space for that, right? Like there's there's no hard drive for that. But we have this infinite amount of space for all the stuff that we blew, you know, or blew off. And listen, I could write both of those letters as well. I have a long history of half-assing it and blowing stuff off. And then I could write a letter of honor in my own defense for stuff I stuck with. And again, I say this, keep this letter very broad. I'm not just talking about creative endeavors here. I'm talking about people you forgave, you know, conversations that you had that were difficult, where you kept a relationship going, you know, what you care about, things that you tend to. Things that have mattered to you enough that you have shown up for them, you know, because that's your field of honor. And inside of that field of honor, I have no doubt that you can create whatever it is you want to create because you already are, you know. So at this point, I'm less interested in you acquiring further business skills, and I'm more interested in you recognizing the rather remarkable compilation of skills and achievements that you've racked up over the last few years, and taking that and putting that toward the power of generating what you want to do next. Even if you look back at the last year and you say, man, all I've been doing is managing stuff and I haven't been creating stuff. Well, that management is going to be the thing that's going to help you manage your time to make the show that you want to make to go on the road next year. So none of it's been wasted. It's all grist for the mill. And now it's just time for you to put it toward the next thing that you want to do, which sounds really achievable to me and also sounds really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be great.
I have one last question, which is, are you allowed to enjoy your life?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I have a pretty good time with it.
Okay. So that helps because a lot of people aren't, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of the things that stop people from making and doing what they want to make and do in the world is this sort of puritanical fundamental idea that their life is not meant to be enjoyed and that pleasure is not allowed to be pursued. So if I have a firm yes from you on that.
Yeah, if anything, my pendulum might have swung too far the fun way.
No, I think you're good. I think you're good. If you have a choice on which way that pendulum can swing, I think it's swinging in the right direction. And so you don't even need to learn discipline. You just need to learn that you already have it. So when I call you, which I am going to do if it's all right with you,
please,
at the end of the summer, I want to hear some details from that letter. I want to make sure that you've written it. And I want you to commit to carrying it around with you all the time to combat the part of you that wants to beat yourself up for being a slacker, which I don't believe. And I want to hear your plan for the year.
All right. I'm going to get it together.
You already have it together, Keith.
I'll write it out.
It's just a question of writing it down. You already have it together. And the other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to reach out to a friend of mine who's a comedian and who has a lot of experience with doing work in troupes and in making abrupt creative pivots in his life and taking fearless action in his ongoing creative journey. And I'm going to talk to him about your case. And that is Michael Ian Black.
Get out.
I'm not getting out. It's true.
That's exciting. That is wonderful.
I know.
I love that. He's from one of my favorites. That is so cool.
Well, he's going to help you too. And I'm going to get advice from him. And he is a remarkably earnest and sincere person. I mean, I know he has that fantastic sardonic shell on the outside. But deep inside is somebody who's really caring and sweet. And so we're going to throw this at him. And he's going to give you further advice for how to proceed, if that's all right with you.
That is absolutely wonderful. Wow.
Look what you manifested, Keith. Look at your power.
This is fantastic. Thank you so much.
Hey, and when you're making your letter of honor, by the way, mention that you bothered to send in an application to be on the podcast and you pushed send, which a bunch of people didn't do, but you did. So here we are.
And we're talking.
And we're talking, and now Michael Ian Black is going to know about you, and he's going to talk about you. So your letter of honor is already, as far as I'm concerned, it's got some pretty good items on it.
Yeah, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much, Liz. Like, this is incredibly empowering. This has been an amazing talk.
I'm psyched, and I can't wait to hear from you, and I can't wait to hear what you come up with. You got this. This is easy. You're in. You're there already.
Yep.
All right, Keith.
I'm in the van.
You're in the van. All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you so much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're going to take a quick break, but first, a word from our sponsors. So if any of you are interested in creative living, which I know you are, or you would not be listening to this podcast, there's something that I think you might enjoy. One of our sponsors this week is called The Great Courses Plus. It's a video on demand service that has incredible resources of educational videos from professors and masters on all sorts of subjects. And one of the episodes of The Great Courses Plus that I watched recently was called The Creative Thinker's Toolkit, which was a really pragmatic breakdown of some of the science behind creativity and some of the ways that you can enfold creativity in your daily life, which I know you all want to be doing. If you're ready to try The Great Courses Plus, there's a special offer that they've made available. You can get a free month of membership, during which time you have unlimited access to all their entire video library. And the way that you do that is you go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/lessons. This is your secret code to get a free month of full video access to the entire library available there. So remember, it's thegreatcoursesplus.com/lessons. Sign up today. Magic Lessons is also supported in part by Stamps.com. You have a list of everything you want to do every day, and here's what you don't want on that list. You have to go to the post office. It's going to make your day sort of ruined. You have to find times that they're open. You have to find parking. You've got to get yourself there. Even if you're working 9-to-5, it's especially hard. So if you're still making time-consuming trips to the post office, you need a better way to do it, and you can do it a better way through Stamps.com. I love it. I use it. It's great for shipping out books and letters to everybody in my professional and personal world. And right now, you can sign up for Stamps.com and you can use my promo code, LESSONS, for this special offer. It's a 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, which includes postage and a digital scale. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. And before you do anything else on that website, what you're going to do is click on the microphone that's at the top of the page and type in this magic word, LESSONS. That's Stamps.com. Enter lessons.
I'm Allegra Ringo.
And I'm Renee Colbert, and we host a podcast called Can I Pet Your Dog?
Renee, can I tell you about a dog I met this week?
I wish that you would. In turn, though, can I tell you about a dog hero?
May I tell you about a dog breed in a segment I like to call Mutt Minute?
I would love that. Could we maybe talk about some dog tech?
Could we have some cool guests on, like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Nicole Byer, and Ann Wheaton?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I'm in.
You're on board? What do you say we do all of this and put it into a podcast?
Yeah, okay.
You think? All right. Should we call it, like, I don't know, Can I Pet Your Dog?
Sure.
All right. What do you say we put it on every Tuesday on Maximum Fun?
Or on iTunes. Sounds good to me.
Meeting's over.
Okay, it's been a few weeks, and now it is time for us to check in on Keith with a little extra help from a dear friend of mine, the comedian Michael Ian Black.
Hello?
Michael?
Hi.
It's Liz.
Hi.
Hi. How are you, sweetie?
I'm okay. How are you?
Thank you for coming on my podcast.
You're so welcome.
I want to tell you what I'm doing and what I want you to help me do.
Okay.
Okay, so on this season, I talked to this guy named Keith. His childhood dream when he grew up was either to be the class clown, which he thought was a job, or a frog, which he also thought was a job. And he, not surprisingly, has ended up wanting to be a comic and has taken it on, I think, really admirably. Like, didn't know how to do it. He lives in Baltimore, took every single improv class, every single stand-up comedy class that was available until there was nothing left to take.
Right.
And then noticed that there were no places for people to perform. So he created his own troupe and his own space. And he's made this thing happen. His obstacle is that so much of his time has gone into creating this space for other people to perform that he is no longer doing his own creative work. So he was feeling like he was almost a victim of his success too much. And he had become what we call the shadow artist, right? Like enabling other people to be the artist, but not actually being the artist himself.
Right.
So we spoke about that. And what I normally do on this podcast is then I do a phone conversation with the pro guest, which would be you in this case. But Keith got so excited that you were the one who was going to be advocating for him that I thought it would be fun to surprise him and actually call him up and have you and me and him all talk to each other at the same time.
Sure. No, I'm happy to, of course.
So what we're going to do is I'm just going to ask you to sit tight and I'm going to talk to him for a little bit and then I'm going to tell him that you're on the line.
Okay.
And then we will, instead of talking about him, we'll talk with him.
All right.
Okay. Here we go.
Good morning.
Hi, is that Keith?
Yes, it is. Hello.
It's Liz. How are you?
Great. How are you, Liz?
How's your summer going?
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah?
It's been fantastic.
I'm eager to hear about your progress on the assignments that I gave you and your work toward spending next summer in a van. But before we begin, I just want to tell you, I have a little surprise for you.
What's that?
I have Michael Ian Black on the line here wanting to talk with you directly.
Oh, my goodness.
Hi, Keith.
There he is.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well. How are you?
I'm well. Congratulations on your journey to becoming a successful comedian.
Thank you.
You've already achieved far more success than many people ever achieve. You're on the phone with me, for example.
This is huge. This is it's the biggest thing that's ever happened.
I'm sure it is.
I like, by the way, Keith, that you just said it's the, like flat out the biggest thing that's ever happened, not the biggest thing that's ever happened to you, just in general in the history of mankind.
Oh, no, he was correct. That was the correct response.
You're feeling this, right?
Of course.
So, Keith, listen, you know, this is not normally how we do things on the Magic Lessons podcast. Normally, I would have talked to Michael alone behind your back about you, and then I would have checked in with you later. But I just thought it would be better if we all three could talk together.
This is wonderful.
So that's what we're doing. So before we begin, just sort of introduce yourself to Michael.
Hi, Michael. I'm Keith. I'm running a comedy venue in Baltimore. We're called the Charm City Comedy Project. And I've been doing that for about 3 years now. And I've been building up the performance and all the shows we've been doing. And then sort of somewhere along the line, I forgot to perform myself and then just really kind of felt just like something was lacking. And then, obviously, like you do, I turned to Liz Gilbert.
Right.
Because that's what you do then. And then, in the past couple of months, I've kind of contracted my obligations to the theater. So I'm really mainly running like a show a week so I can kind of more focus on putting some quality content into the shows. And that's kind of where I'm putting my head now and trying to really get back into the performance side of things.
Well, it sounds like you're doing everything right. What the hell do you need me for?
Well, I need affirmation. I have a giant hole that needs to be filled in my heart.
If you need affirmation, Michael Ian Black is probably not the right guy to go to.
I will give you affirmation right now. First of all, Keith, do you have a day job that you do? Do you have an occupation that pays the bills, or is this now your day job?
This is not my day job.
Okay, so you're holding down a full-time job and running Charm City Comedy Project and performing and writing.
Well, I'm holding down a part-time job and going to school and running Charm City Comedy Project and performing and writing.
And do you have a family that you need to take care of, or it's just you?
It's just me.
All right. Okay, so now I feel like I have a better understanding of your personal situation. And do you have enough money to pay the rent? And do you have roommates, or are you living by yourself?
I moved in with my parents a few months ago. I'm not paying rent at the time. I'm looking for a new place.
Well, that's great. So your expenses are low. Your overhead is low.
Very low.
That's great. So it sounds like you've set yourself up in a way that allows you to do creative work without being burdened by too many financial obligations.
That's right.
And how old are you?
I'm 35.
Oh, no, forget it. It's over.
Right?
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what age you are. I'm just trying to get a sense. You can do this work at any age and succeed. In fact, it might even be better in some ways to start when you're older because you have more life experience from which to draw. So the creative work that you're doing can have more depth and nuance than somebody who's in their early 20s and really has only experienced going to school and smoking weed. And that's often what they talk about in their acts. And creatively, you're in a troupe. So you're trying to do sketch comedy?
Yes. I need to learn more about sketch. I'm doing sort of a sketch to improv thing. But yeah, building up to more sketch.
With the goal of what? Do you have an end game?
Ideally, I'd like to have a one-man show together. I've just started working on and kind of watching other people and how they do it, and more of a solo sketch show than a one-man show, and to tour that around.
Okay, so the performing that you're doing is with a troupe or it's by yourself right now?
Right now, I am performing with Championship Arm Wrestling, and that's a group, but I'm working on doing some more solo stuff.
And when you say you're working on doing solo stuff, what does that mean?
That means that I write down little things in books sometimes.
And you haven't, but you haven't been performing the solo stuff?
No, I haven't.
And why not? You have a goal, you're working towards it, but it seems like the critical piece of that goal is missing, which is the performance aspect of it.
Yeah.
So what has stopped you from performing? Because you clearly have a venue.
I do.
You have the desire. You have ideas written down in a book.
Yeah, I got to take that step. I guess.
Well, what's holding you back from?
I'm not content with any of my little ideas yet to get up there and put them out there, I guess.
You don't have enough ideas, or you haven't fleshed them out enough, or you're afraid to get on the stage by yourself, or all of the above.
I guess I haven't really fleshed them out, and I guess part of it too is I guess I feel like I'm trying to do something different than what happens at a lot of places. Like I'd like to do, I guess, character work and do solo sketches in that way, and I guess I just feel like it's weird in a stand-up open mic environment.
Right, but you literally have a venue where this kind of work can exist, and you can book it because it's your venue. You have something that nobody else has.
I totally could.
Now, Liz, have you talked to Keith about this missing step?
Not exactly in the same tone that you're talking to him
about it. Am I admonishing too much?
I mean, we got good cop, bad cop being here. I just love how the tone of Magic Lessons just got like...
It turned into boot camp.
So bracing all of a sudden.
I don't mean to be bracing. It's really me trying to gather information.
No, I love it. I just picture.
If I'm bracing, I certainly don't mean to be Keith.
No, it's good. Bracing is good. And I'm sort of sitting here smiling, picturing, Keith sitting with a swinging light bulb over his head while, in a darkly lit room while you're pacing around.
Because if I'm coming across in that manner as aggressive, I apologize. However.
No, I love it.
However.
I love it.
I do feel like oftentimes creative people will allow excuses, whatever they may be, to block their progress when, in fact, the excuses don't exist. They're mirages that you create for yourself in order to have a reason to not do the thing that you want to do, because the thing that you want to do is terrifying.
Yeah.
So what you want to do, as I understand it, is create a one-man show of character-based sketch comedy that you can perform. You have some initial ideas. You have a venue. You have experience performing. And you don't have anything in your life preventing you from doing it, financially or otherwise. So you can certainly understand my annoyance with you, Keith, when you're not doing it.
I'm letting you down terribly.
Well, Keith, actually, you're letting us both down, son. No, I'm just...
because, bad cop, bad cop, Liz.
Suddenly I'm coming over to the dark side. It's more fun. I'm like, I'm shedding my gentle demeanor, and I'm like... Let me take a punch at him. What I want to say is, is that you actually don't have me feeling disappointed, Keith. You have me feeling confused.
Okay.
Because if I recall, the assignment that I gave you was to start creating a granular schedule of everything that you had to do over the next few months in order to make it the case that you could have that van and that troop by next year. So have your goals changed, or have you already – like, where are you right now? Because I just want to know what we're working on, I guess.
The van is there, and there's the people in the van. But yeah, I had a solo sketch show, and I had a van of people.
Okay.
That was the idea.
So you're going to travel in the van of people. You guys are going to do a show together, and then you're also going to do your own thing separately?
That was the idea, yeah.
Okay, cool. I missed that piece.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was feeling confused about where we're at. So why don't you let me know what the last couple weeks have been like for you since we've spoken, and what you've done toward that?
I got really excited. I went to Improv Olympic in Chicago, and I did like a week-long intensive there.
Uh-huh.
And I saw a few one-man shows at that venue that were really exciting because they had like improv moments in them. So that was really cool. I wrote myself a letter. I need to more granularly get my schedule together. I think I have like a rough draft, but I think that part of what I'm doing is I'm getting myself really into like the mechanics of it, the details of it, and kind of putting some of the creative work later because that feels easier, I guess. And then just kind of I'm thinking about where we're going to get vans from and that kind of stuff, as opposed to concentrating on doing the creative part of it as much.
How's this sounding to you, Michael?
Bad.
It's terrible.
Bad. I'm going to find fault a little bit with Liz here.
Okay.
Because as a comedy professional, which is what I am, to me, the idea of getting a van and traveling the country performing and seems like you're putting the cart a little bit before the horse, because that is an intensive project from a production point of view, where I feel like what you should be doing is developing your one-man show on a daily basis and performing it at the very least on a monthly basis and possibly more than that. Because, as I said, you have the venue, so you can put it up whenever you want. The idea of touring, while undoubtedly fun, and it would be tremendous fun, it just seems like you're getting ahead of yourself because you have no audience at this point. You have no following. And so a lot of your work will be about gathering that. It will be finding venues. It will be, particularly if you're traveling with other people, it will be securing hotel rooms. It will be worrying about food and gas and all the things you need not worry about if you just stay home and focus all of your energies on doing the show to the best of your abilities. And when you have that show, that one-man show, at a place where you're comfortable, then I feel like you can take that show and either rent a theater in Baltimore or in D.C. or work your contacts at Improv Olympics or whatever and secure space at one other venue, somewhere where you can perform it, as opposed to trying to perform it all over the place. Because your goal right now should be purely creative. It should be purely about getting that show to the best of its ability. And I promise you, when it is at its best, and when it is the hilarious and wonderful thing that I know it can be, the opportunities to do it elsewhere will follow. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. It does.
And it sounds like your fallback as a person making excuses, as we all are, we are all people making excuses, is it sounds like you have a great strength in the professorial side of things, which can be extremely beneficial to a performer because so many of us, and myself included, are terrible at doing the day-to-day things that need to get done in order to advance our own careers. And it sounds like you've got a great handle on that stuff and that it comes easy for you and that you're good at it. But as you yourself have found out, it gets in the way of doing the work that you really want to do. So as much of that stuff as you can shed, the better off you will be. And planning a tour is just adding more and more professorial stuff to your plate.
Totally.
I will turn it back over to Liz.
Actually, I'm going to turn it back over to Keith. How does that land on you?
It lands like a realization that that's kind of what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
I just keep on putting these things in my way where I need to, you know, like you said, produce my way around these things as maybe a way to have excuses to not delve into what I'm trying to do.
You know, the other thing I was noticing is that you're really good at learning how to do stuff, which can sometimes start to feel like you're doing it. So when you said you went out to Chicago, I got all excited. But when you said you went out to Chicago to watch a bunch of acts, I thought, oh, that's a thing that a person could do that could make them feel like they're advancing their creative career. But you're not actually doing your creativity, right? Watching a bunch of other people do improv acts is not you taking a creative risk.
Well, I was there for an improv intensive. So I
sure,
did,
that's a class, right? Like,
yeah,
you,
yeah,
that's a class that you paid for, right? So I know that you already exhausted every single class that was available in Baltimore that was a comedy class, right? I know that you're good at being a student. And I know that I know people, and I'm saying this as a cautionary tale, not just to you, but to our listeners. I know people who never stop taking classes. I taught for one semester at the University of Tennessee, and the best and brightest, most talented, fantastic writer in that class was on his second PhD. And it was, you know, it just made me nuts because I was like, there's nothing left for you to learn in these classrooms. You know, I want you to be doing this work. I don't want you to study this work forever. So I almost want to put a prohibition on you that you are not allowed to take any more classes until you make something. How does that feel?
That feels like I should work on more stuff because, yeah, that was kind of where I was going. I was just going to try to sign up for more classes at UCB and sort of keep learning. But I see exactly what you're saying.
I mean, you've been doing this work, right? You took all the classes. You started your troupe. You guys did your fake wrestling thing. You know, like you've been on stage, you know. And see, the problem is you have to be really careful as a creative person. There's another pitfall, and I'm not just talking to you here. I'm talking to everybody out there. How many of you out there who want to be writers have a bookshelf full of books on how to be a writer? And every single time there's a new book about how to be a writer, you buy it and you read it. And what you think is happening while you're reading it is that you're actually like working on your art, but you're not. you're not, you know? And it's the same with like taking art classes and with taking singing classes. And there was a TED talk about this once. There's a part of your brain that can be tricked into thinking that you're being productive by you talking about what you want to do. So that when you're done talking about it, you feel this sense of this endorphin release that you were like, wow, I just accomplished something. So studying something, reading about it, you know, watching speeches about it, going and taking seminars about it, none of this is actually really doing it. You know, and you're at an age now, as Michael said, and I know he's kind of being the bad cop here, but I think I kind of like that tone because I want to bring it to you too. You're at an age now where you're independent, you know, you've got nobody leaning on you financially. You've studied everything there is to study about this art form. You've created a venue for everybody else in Baltimore to be doing their art. You are ready. And I'm a little afraid that you've set your life up in a way that you're going to always be orbiting this thing and never doing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you should do it and decide that you don't like it, that it's not for you, that you're not made to be a performer, that it brings you more discomfort than it brings you joy, then I am going to be the first person to be absolutely delighted to see you go back to being a producer. But you're the one who wrote me a letter and said, I'm tired of being on the edges of this thing. I want to be at the center of it. You know, so I feel you owe it to yourself to get in there and actually start making something in a real way that's not just you jotting stuff down in a notebook and taking another class.
May I interject for a second?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Keith, you said there are open mics in Baltimore, right?
Oh, tons, yeah.
Oh, tons. Okay. Liz, am I allowed to give an assignment?
Yeah, please. That's why you're here.
Keith. Your assignment, and I would like to make it a multiple part assignment, but I will start with just one part.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you need to do is sign up for an open mic, or at least know the open mic that you're going to.
Okay.
Then once you have that in your head, once you know what that date is, take one of the things in your notebook expand it as it needs to be expanded, go to the open mic, and do your best, knowing that there's a very good chance that it will be terrible and you will fail. In doing so, you will accomplish several things. The first is you will do something. You will be on a stage performing. The second is you will have expanded your one line into a character or a monologue or 3 or 4 minutes of stand-up comedy, whatever it is that ends up becoming. And the third thing you will do is know the taste of failure, which is maybe the most critical thing of the three. When you know what that tastes like and you know that you have gotten on a stage and done your absolute best and it has gone not as well as you would have liked or may have gone terribly, and you still have the desire after that moment to get back on a stage and do it again, that will teach you an enormous amount about yourself. It will also teach you an enormous amount about your writing to hear from an audience what is working and what isn't, and it will teach you an enormous amount about your writing from knowing in your head, separate and apart from the audience, what you feel like worked and what you feel like didn't, because those two things may not line up. You may enjoy and feel like there's a line of work that you can explore further that may not have gotten a reaction from the audience, but that you yourself feel a creative spark towards. That, I think, is the easiest and most productive way for you to spend your time. I would love for you to do it once a week for the next month or multiple times a week for the next month, but I think just once for now would be a tremendously effective way for you to take that next step forward.
Over to you, Keith.
Yeah, I was jotting down a few notes. I need to get out there and run some of this stuff.
Well, fortunately, we're recording this whole thing, so you don't even need to take notes.
And Keith, you know, I know we're being firm with you, and it's because I think Michael and I are both sensing the same thing. It's that feeling that you have when you see somebody who's just been sitting on the edge of the cliff for just a little bit too long, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the frustration that you feel watching that is, I know you can do this. And not only that, I know you want to do this. And I know that if you don't do it, that frustration is going to calcify in you in some way that is going to make your life less than what it could be. And I don't mean that means you're denying yourself the opportunity to become rich and famous. I mean, you're denying yourself the opportunity to find out something about you that cannot be found out any other way. There's something that Keith needs to learn about Keith, and he's not going to get it in a classroom, and he's not going to get it in a producer's office, and he's not going to get it any other way than by standing in front of that microphone and jumping, you know? And I want that for you, and you want that for you. That's why you brought yourself to my attention.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little tough love, but there's love in it. I want you to know that.
Thank you.
Do you believe it?
Yeah, I totally
okay.
do. I appreciate all the encouragement to get out there and move on something. I guess you are sensing, yeah, there is the, I'm finding all the ways around doing what I want to do. And it's I guess, apparent to the point where you know exactly, I feel like you are speaking to the point where I am, where it's, all right, I want to do this thing, but I just keep on laying these things in front of me so that I have excuses. I'm making excuses instead of making art.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
I suspect you know the answer to this. Why are you doing that?
It's fear.
There we go.
Right. What are you afraid of?
As I'm trying to purvey myself as like a teacher of and a purveyor of comedies, if I come out there and do something that, you know, in a way that I haven't done before and it just stinks up the place, I feel like it puts the stink all over everything I do.
So that is something, so that's an area in which you're capable. You're a capable improviser and teacher of improvisational comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you do in this other realm will not take away from that. You'll just be expanding your palette of things that you do. And when I was in acting school many years ago, I knew so many acting teachers who were in, I would say, a very similar place that you're in. They were very competent teachers, and impassioned teachers, and some of them were still out there trying to get acting work, and some were not. Some of them had really committed to teaching, and some you could tell really wanted to be acting, but weren't. They were teaching instead, and there was a kind of sadness that hovered around them because they weren't pursuing the thing that they really wanted to pursue. What's different about acting versus what you're doing is that for an actor, you are really at the mercy so many times of other people. As somebody who's creating the work himself, you don't have that. You are in a great position to create the work yourself. So you're only relying on yourself, which should remove a tremendous obstacle. And the other thing I would say is, if you get on a stage and the thing that you do is terrible and you fail, if nothing else, and there will be much else, but if nothing else, in your role as a teacher, it will really enrich your ability to teach students who may be struggling. And failure, I would say, is the biggest part of the creative process. It is not something that should be shunned. It's something that needs to be embraced, because we will all fail far more than we will succeed. I can't tell you the number of times I have failed. I literally can't tell you because it's so many times. So many times.
Can you give us an example, Michael, of a particularly devastating failure? I just think it's useful for people.
Sure. I mean, I can give you any number of examples.
Yeah, give us a good one.
I can give you examples of my first time doing stand-up. I can tell you about being much further along in my career in getting up on a stage when people know who I am, and getting on a stage and telling jokes and having people stare at me blankly and feeling that utter despair. And it gets worse the further you go along because the stakes are that much higher. Being hired by like a professional group, like a group of lawyers who want me to come and entertain them at some event, and being terrible and failing and knowing that I'm going to take their money as a result of this, and just running back to my hotel room afterwards and burying my head in my pillow and just being in utter shock and disbelief that anybody would pay me to be as miserable at comedy as I am. These are experiences that happen to me now, you know? And then the next day you dust yourself off and you go, all right, well, onwards and upwards, or at least onwards, if not upwards. It never stops. The failure never stops. And you learn to embrace it.
And Michael,
mm-hmm.
And this is sort of the fundamental question of the Magic Lessons podcast. Why would you keep doing that? What do you get from that that's worth that? Why?
From a technical point of view.
Uh-huh.
Failing will always instruct you much more than succeeding. Success almost never needs to be analyzed. When you succeed, you go, oh, I did it, and I'm good at this, and therefore I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. When you fail, it forces you, if you want to not fail the next time, to look at a very technical and, to use your word, granular level at what you're doing, and to understand, or to try to understand, what it is that you did that resulted in this horrible outcome. And it forces you to adapt and make adjustments and move the ball forward because you have no choice. I've come to look at failure as a gift. I hate it. It's a gift that I would exchange if I could every single time, but it is a gift, and you have to look at it like that.
Keith, how is this all? What I really want you to do now is tell us where we are right and where we are wrong and what we are saying about creativity in general and about your life in particular. I don't want you to just sit there like having this rain on you. I want you to tell us what feels accurate and what feels like part of you goes, eh, I don't know about that.
I think a lot of this really does speak to where I am on this journey, and it does ring true, and it makes a lot of sense. I feel like I've been looking into it. I was watching another TED talk about vulnerability and sort of how that plays into it. And I feel like this is kind of echoing that sort of idea, the idea that, you know, I have to, like you said, just go out there and let myself fail a few times and put myself out there and not worry about how it comes off, but to, like you said, be courageous with it and just to say that, hey, I'm a courageous person, instead of coming up saying, I'm up here, I'm a funny person.
Yeah.
That way at least I'm getting up and working on the craft.
I know so many comedians, you know, I've known a lot of comedians over the last however many years, 20 years, and I've known of comedians over the last 20 years. And a lot of times I hear the same story, which is there will be a group of comedians performing in a town, Chicago, New York, Boston, wherever. And there'll always be the one guy who everybody's like, that guy sucks. That guy gets on stage every week and fails, but keeps coming back week after week after week. And some of those guys end up drifting away, and some of those guys end up becoming pretty big stars. I guess I'll drop one name because he's doing very, very well, and I think he's a good example. There's a comedian named Hannibal Buress.
We all love him.
Yeah, he's tremendously funny. Who was in the Chicago scene for years, and he was the guy who everybody said would never make it.
Wow.
Because I think his delivery was awkward, and I don't even know why. I never saw him when he was terrible. I've only seen him be good. And now he's one of the fastest rising stars in comedy, and I think, from what I know, it had almost everything to do with persistence, which is, I think, the most underrated attribute in any creative endeavor, and I think talent is the most overrated attribute in any creative endeavor. I'm not even sure I believe in talent, but I do believe in persistence.
On that note, Keith, and Michael, I want to fill you in on something else that happened in the last conversation. So Keith, like many of us, has a terrorist who lives in his head who tells him what a failure and a fuck-up he is, right?
Uh-huh.
And what the terrorist had been telling him over the last few years is, you know, you never finish anything, you never complete anything, you don't have any discipline. And just from talking to Keith in our last conversation, I knew that that wasn't true. He started a comedy troupe.
Right.
He finished all these, you know, like he's totally devoted himself to this art and to this craft in a way that is incredibly disciplined and incredibly focused. And he took nothing and made something out of it, brought people together, you know, producing like show after show after show. Like he's all kinds of successful at getting stuff done. And one of the kind of more emotional exercises, Keith, that I gave to you was that I wanted to ask you to write a letter in your own defense to yourself about everything you've ever done that you finished, in order to help you start to sort of retell your own story, because I thought you were stuck in this story about you're a guy who doesn't get anything completed. I think it's really important for us to change our stories about that sometimes. So I wondered if you had done that, and if you could tell us what that was like doing that and what you learned from it and what it felt like.
I did do that, and it felt a little weird at first writing it. It's very self-congratulatory. I guess I haven't really done much of that. And
who has?
Right?
Right. Go on. Sorry, sweetie.
Once I got through it, it's a nice gift that I have for myself, and it's something that I've turned to a few times now just to remind myself that I can get things done, and that I can, you know, take care of. I've done some pretty awesome things in my life, and that, like you said, it's that narrative, and it's that narrative that continues that narrative to happen, because when something goes wrong, I can just turn that back on, let that tape replay, and I think this is like a nice, it's a really nice stopgap in that. And if that tape starts to play, I'm like, well, that's not true. You got this letter here that says all the cool stuff you did, and you reminded me in our phone call last time that you know, I can pay attention to all the half-finished trains in my locker, or I can take a look at all the different accomplishments I have.
Yeah. What were some of the things on your list, just out of curiosity?
I made a couple albums with bands. I quit drinking and smoking cigarettes.
Well, that's huge.
Yeah. I produced,
wish Michael Ian Black could say the same. go on.
Uh-huh. I rebuilt an engine one time. That was pretty cool. I put together a regular music show for a long time. That went well. I just got my associate's degree last month. That was good. So yeah, there's a list of things.
Yeah. And pretty soon on that list is going to be, I started doing stand-up when I thought I wasn't ready, which is when everyone starts.
Right.
You know, I mean, there is this really pathological misconception we have somehow in this culture that you're not supposed to do something till you're already good at it. And I'm just not sure how you're supposed to do that. I don't see how that could ever work. You're supposed to start before you're ready and before you're good at it. And that's how you get ready and how you get good at it. Michael, do you have anything you want to add to that?
I think that is spot on. I know from my own experience, one of my goals for myself in life was to write a book. And I didn't know how to. I wasn't ready. And I sat down and wrote a book. And I don't mean to make it sound easier than it was. It was terrible and hard. And I saw it through. That being said, I'm just like you, Keith. I'm just like everybody. There's so many things that I've started and abandoned. So many things where I ping-pong from idea to idea to idea because one sounds better than the next, and I abandoned the one before. And I hate that. I hate when I do that, but I do it constantly, and I do it to this day. But both things can be true. You can make mistakes, and you can persist in something and see it through, and you can be doing those things simultaneously.
How does that sound, Keith?
That makes a lot of sense. There can be multiple things going on. There always are. There's multiple ideas going on in everybody's heads, but
you do need to have one that you're pursuing with fervor.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't mean to suggest that you should allow yourself to be distracted or let that be an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Your goal, as you stated, is to start getting on a stage and doing this one man show. And that has to be the thing that you're working towards every day in some capacity. And that's it.
Yeah.
Keith, I know we cornered you. You weren't expecting this phone call to have Michael on it, and you might not have been expecting this phone call to go in the direction that it went in. But I feel like I'm talking to both you and a whole bunch of other people right now. You know, when you got down to the crux of it, when Michael said, why aren't you doing this? You have everything you need. You've taken all the classes you need. You have the financial security that you need. You have a stage. You know how to do this craft. You have the passion for it. Why are you not doing it? And you said the answer that right here in the middle of season two of the Magic Lessons podcast, I can tell you is the answer every single fucking time. Fear.
Right.
You know, every single time. It's never going to be another reason beyond that. And so if we can name it for what it is, then we can start to work on it, you know? And I just don't want it to hold you back. You've done too much work to come this close and then not go on that stage, you know?
I would like to add very briefly, in my experience as a creative person, that fear is the thing that you need to be running towards, because that's the thing that is speaking the most to you. If you didn't fear it, it would mean that the stakes weren't high enough to merit that fear. When the fear is strongest is because that's the thing that is calling to you. This is the thing that means the most to me, and therefore if I fail at it, it will hurt the most. But it hurts more, I think, to not have tried.
Yeah. Yeah, that totally rings true, And you're right. It's just a matter of getting up there, following that fear, and get up there and do it and see where it goes. And then, like you said, and like I've heard a million times, is that it's that line, that line that you love, that the crowd doesn't get at all, and then there's that toss away that just throws the room into fits.
Mm-hmm.
So without getting up there and really trying it out there, you know, you don't really know.
No. And you'll never know. I mean, that's the terrible thing about doing comedy is it really requires an audience. So it makes every new moment incredibly fraught because you just don't know. You just don't know. And I think every comedian experiences that.
Well, every creator experiences that too. And with comedians, it's just so immediate.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like if I write a book and it bombs 2 years later after I wrote that sentence, you know, you guys get that response instantly, which is both the glory and the terror of that particular line of work. Keith, last thing before I let everybody go, do you have anything you want to say or ask of Michael Ian Black while he's on the phone? I know you've loved his work for so long and we've been talking to you, but I thought if you want to pick his brain or say anything to him, here's your chance.
It's so nice to talk to you. I've been a big fan. What's like some of the best advice you've gotten that kind of pushed you along?
First of all, be early, which is to say, show up and show up on time, which implies a level of preparedness. That's advice I don't always take and need to, and always feel so much better when I do. And this is going to be maybe the tritest advice you will receive, but I think it's true, and it has been for me, that the journey really is its own reward. The laughter and accolades that you may receive will be lovely in the moment and ultimately ring hollow. What will last are the friendships that you make and those moments of wonder that you experience right before you step out on a stage for the first time, and the hours of work that you put into it, because those hours will end up teaching you more about yourself than anything else could. And that's the fun of it, is figuring out where you're going and trying to get there. Arriving is just whatever. It's a selfie that you take and file away, and then you keep walking.
Keith, listen, I think you're brave, and I think it's so cool what you've made and what you're continuing to make. I love your vulnerability for allowing yourself to come on the show and to tell us what you're doing and working on. And I really, really want you to jump now. And I kind of feel like I emotionally need you to tell me that you're going to do this, that you're going to sign up for an open mic, and that, you know, in a very short amount of time, you're going to be up on that stage doing this.
I'm going to need a week.
A week. Good. I was going to give you like 6 months.
Okay.
A week.
I was going to give you 2 days. So I think a week is a good compromise.
Good middle. All right.
So Keith, look, you're shaking on that. Okay. I mean, this is a contract that we have now, that this is something that you're going to do, and you're going to do it because, as I hope you get by now, there's something that you need to learn about your life that you will not be able to learn any other way.
And you know, podcasts are legally binding contracts.
They are.
Thanks, Obama.
Keith, good luck. Good luck knowing the taste of failure and the joy of trying. And Michael, thank you so much for coming on and making this a really cool and unusual episode. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. And Keith, I'm really rooting for you and hope that you get up there, and I hope that you fall on your face in the best possible way.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks for talking.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
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 Michael Ian Black is an actor, comedian, and host of the podcast How to Be Amazing, which everybody should be checking out because it is amazing. You can also see him on great television programs like The Jim Gaffigan Show and Another Period. And he's the author of several books, including the surprisingly moving memoir Navel Gazing, True Tales of Bodies, Mostly Mine, But Also My Mom's, which I know sounds weird. Has one of the best subtitles in the history of literature. You can find out a lot more about him at michaelianblack.org. He is also one of my favorite people to watch on Twitter. So that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope you'll join us next time. Magic Lessons is a production of the Maximum Fun Network. Michelle Siegel is our extraordinary producer. Our theme music is by Dave Cahill, and it was performed by Dave Cahill and Dallas Vietti. Special thanks to Paul Ruest of Argo Studios and Jesse Thorne of Maximum Fun. You can hear all the episodes and find out a lot more about my comings and goings at elizabethgilbert.com. And of course, if you want to continue your own explorations into creativity, which I really hope you will do, it might help you to pick up my book, which is called Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear, published by Riverhead Books. If you can, please leave us a comment on iTunes. It helps other people discover the show, and we appreciate it. And let's keep this conversation going on Facebook and Twitter. I'm at Gilbert Liz. See you next time.
Attention, Europe. This fall, Maximum Fun is bringing a bunch of your favorite podcasters to London. Catch Judge John Hodgman, International Waters, and Bullseye all recording live episodes at the London Podcast Festival. We'll have fan meetups and we'll be joined on stage by a glittering array of celebrity guests. The London Podcast Festival runs September 22nd through 26th, and you can buy your tickets right now. Just go to MaximumFun.org.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.